Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. And from the United Faculty of Florida, representing over 20,000 faculty and graduate assistants at 13 universities and 14 colleges, working to encourage lawmakers to fund Florida's future through support of public education. Online at myuff.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
With just days left in Florida's legislative session, the Florida Senate has okayed new tax cuts.
We have been working for many years, members, to reduce the commercial rent tax.
Also this week, Florida lawmakers say firefighters deserve help getting treatment for cancer related to their jobs, but some are pushing back.
Why do we need to question providing a cancer benefit for somebody who is sacrificing their life 24/7, 365 for your family?
We'll also hear about a bill lawmakers passed in honor of a late state senator. It creates a new class for Florida high schoolers focused on financial literacy. And we'll look into the latest efforts to crack down on one of the most prevalent crimes in the state, human trafficking. I'm Regan McCarthy. This is Capitol Report. The Florida Senate has approved its tax package. Sean Mulcahy has the details.
With just 2 days left in the legislative session, the Senate took up a major tax package that would add new cuts. Among the savings are two sales tax holidays. One is for back to school shopping, including clothing, school supplies, and computers under $1,000. The other is a hurricane preparedness holiday. It includes generators, fuel tanks, and batteries. In addition, the package adds new savings for Florida businesses. Lakeland Republican Senator Kelly Stargell is the bill's sponsor.
We have been working for many years, members, to reduce the commercial rent tax. This does that again, further reduces the commercial rent tax from 5.7 to 5.5.
Another provision, which hasn't appeared in any of the bill's language before reaching the floor, changes the way businesses pay sales tax.
And in addition to that, it has an amendment that exempts from sales tax items that are donated to a 501c3.
In other words, businesses can skirt sales tax on items they've purchased to sell but are left over, provided it's donated to a nonprofit organization. Florida Trend reports Walt Disney World heavily lobbied for this addition. Notably left out of the package is a requirement that local governments share tax revenue with charter schools. Lawmakers debated forcing cities who voted to raise taxes for public education to share that money with charter schools. Stargell says plainly, it was unpopular.
This is an amendment that dealt with the referendums from school taxes, and in discussion with the members of this chamber, they had strong opposition to that provision, so we are removing it from the bill.
It does, however, provide tax relief for North Florida farmers whose businesses were damaged by Category 5 Hurricane Michael last October. It refunds sales taxes on building materials used to repair commercial farm buildings and fences. It also refunds taxes paid on fuel for debris removal. Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried advocated for these tax breaks, along with a cost-sharing program for farming equipment, which is not in this bill. In its current form, the measure has sizable differences with the House's version. It's headed back to the House, where lawmakers will have to reconcile before session ends, presumably on Saturday afternoon. I'm Sean Mulcahy.
Meanwhile, as the legislative session nears an end, lawmakers are sending bills to Governor Ron DeSantis' desk for final approval. He can sign the bills, veto them, or let them pass without his signature. A bill that provides benefits to firefighters diagnosed with cancer is one of the latest bills heading to the governor. But as Casey Chapter reports, it's facing some opposition.
The bill would give firefighters treatment coverage as well as a payment of $25,000 upon diagnosis. But the Florida League of Cities expressed opposition in a letter Monday, calling the move a significant unfunded mandate. Chief Financial Officer and State Fire Marshal Jimmy Patronis denounced the league's position after a press conference Thursday.
Why do we need to question providing a cancer benefit for somebody who is sacrificing their life 24/7, 365 for your family? So I think they're pretty selfish in their efforts and their messaging.
The League of Cities pointed out the bill requires local governments to fund the added cancer coverage, but many Florida cities are still recovering from financial losses caused by Hurricane Michael. Patronis argues there is plenty of funding for hurricane recovery. He cited a recent donation of $50,000 from Kaiser University.
As we see dollars pour in, we see dollars anticipating from the federal government pour in, you know, I hear their concerns, but this is going to have support and needs coming up from all different directions.
The Florida League of Cities did not return calls for comment. Patronis also says the legislation will help Florida communities in the long run.
Our firefighters, our first responders are critical to good schools, economic development, prosperity. You can't have any of that if you don't have a robust safety net there. And if you don't make a profession that's attractive for folks to go into, then we'll have trouble recruiting individuals that want to make that type of selfless service back to our communities.
I'm Casey Chapter.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a bill to ensure students know financial basics is passed in honor of a late senator.
This is so important to me because of my good friend, Senator Dorothy Hubel.
Lawmakers say more should be done to protect the state's victims of human trafficking. A bill that had stalled in a Senate committee is once again moving forward.
From Key West all the way to West Palm Beach, there are about 20 service beds. That's all that exists. And so we need to have more of those services. We know that those are lifelong effects.
The legislature hasn't passed a bill to clarify which felons can or can't vote, but Neil Voles of the Florida Rights Restoration Commission says what they've done so far is out of their jurisdiction.
What's changing is the legislature trying to redefine completion of sentence.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org.
In the first legislative session since the passing of Senator Dorothy Hugel, lawmakers have pushed through a piece of legislation she backed for years. Ryan Daly reports the bill creates a mandatory financial literacy course for high school students.
This is so important to me because of my good friend, Senator Dorothy Hugel. She fought so hard for this piece of legislation, and I'm glad we can do it for her.
That's Republican Senator Travis Hudson, who became emotional as the bill passed in his chamber Thursday. Hudson carried the legislation this session on behalf of his late friend and colleague, Dorothy Hugel. He calls it transformational for the state's education system.
It's stuff that if you hadn't learned it, you would go through it in the growing pains of becoming an adult, trying to stumble through figuring it all out. We do a crash course in a half a semester.
Hudson says as it stands, financial literacy curriculum is packed into about 2 weeks of a high school economics course.
Like I said, it's only 2 weeks of economics. I'd rather them learn more microeconomics in economics, because I do learn a lot, and then get into a financial literacy on its own and not be shoved in a two-week curriculum.
But the creation of a half-credit financial literacy course isn't all the bill does. It also looks to breathe life back into career and technical education, or CTE, in high schools.
It creates a new 18-credit CTE pathway to high school graduations with a focus on vocational and technical training.
And for students who aren't excelling in the traditional academic pathway to graduation, it will require districts to inform those students of the more career-oriented option.
It requires an academic advisor on CTE options for students who are at risk of not graduating and fall below a 2.0.
When students are ready to move on to the next phase of their lives, Hudson says, they'll have a day to be recognized.
It establishes a college and career decision day to recognize students for their post-high school plans.
With respect to the financial literacy course, Hudson says ultimately it will work out to a cost savings for the state.
I think when you look at financial literacy, we've got a lot of people that are going into debt or trying to figure out life at a young age. And if we could teach them this, even though there's a front-end cost, the back-end benefits are going to be tremendous to the state.
When it came time for a Senate vote, the measure passed unanimously, and the chamber's president, Senator Bill Galvano, had some heartwarming words for Hudson before moving on to the next bill in the waning days of session.
Senator Hudson, I am absolutely confident that Senator Huckel's looking down, smiling, and she loves that 40-0.
The bill will now head to the desk of Governor Ron DeSantis, who is almost certain to sign it into law. DeSantis has been a vocal supporter of career education in the K-12 system since before taking office. I'm Ryan Daly.
A bill to battle human trafficking is moving forward in the last days of Florida's legislative session. While the House bill had its final vote Monday, Plantation Democratic Senator Lauren Book's bill had languished until, in a last-minute move, lawmakers pulled the measure from its final committee of reference.
Senator of the 32nd, Senator Book. We're moving forward, I understand.
We are. Thank you, Mr. President. And it is my intention to put the substance of the Senate bill on the House bill.
The Senator of the 32nd, Senator Book, moves that the rules be waived by the required two-thirds vote and that HB...
Book says human trafficking is a serious concern in Florida. Across the country, she says experts estimate more than 40 million people are victims of the crime.
And worst of all, our Florida Department of Health says that half of all of these victims are under the age of 18 years old. Human trafficking is now understood as the second largest criminal enterprise in the country, only behind drug trafficking.
Book says she's been traveling the state to better understand the effects of human trafficking and how local governments are working to fight the crime. A number of senators and state officials met Book on one of her stops in Pasco County, where lawmakers joined a sheriff's deputy for a ride-along.
And actually, while we were out on this ride-along, an individual was arrested for utilizing the services of an underage trafficking victim. That's happening right now in one of the senators in our district.
Book has a bill she says will help to fight human trafficking by providing better services for people who are victims of human trafficking. Book says right now there's a major lack of available services.
From Key West all the way to West Palm Beach, there are about 20 service beds. That's all that exists. And so we need to have more of those services. We know that those are lifelong effects that these survivors have to endure. And so that direct service organization will go a long way in making sure that those needs are being met.
Book says her bill will ensure law enforcement, hospital workers, and even hotel workers get training to better identify and provide assistance for human trafficking victims. Book credits Savannah Parvu for many of the pieces of her legislation. Parvu was a victim of sex trafficking for years and told lawmakers she spent many of those years living in a hotel.
I feel like if we had a bill like this when I was being trafficked in Central Florida beginning at 12 years old, I wouldn't have been trafficked as long as I was. I wouldn't have a lot of the trauma that I've had, a lot of the physical problems. I've had to have a hysterectomy and I'll never be able to have kids because of what was done to me. And I feel like if hotels were trained and had some kind of protocol to report human trafficking, then I wouldn't have been trafficked as long as I was.
Book's bill also creates a database of people who are charged with soliciting for prostitution. She says she hopes that provision will help influence the laws of supply and demand.
We know that if there is a reduced demand, that the supply will go. We know that. And so one of the things that this is going to target will allow for folks who utilize the services of a prostitute to be placed on a database. This is already public information, it will be removed after 5 years unless there is a subsequent offense, and at that time, they will be permanently on this database.
The measure is awaiting a final vote in the Senate. It will also need another hearing in the House. Since January 8th, felons have been registering to vote as long as they've completed their sentence and did not commit a felony sexual offense or murder. But all session long, the legislature has been trying to determine exactly who that excludes. The current bill includes attempted murder and also makes a felon have to pay off any outstanding civil liens or obligations to the court as a result of their case. Neil Valls, who works for the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, says those things were not in the minds of those who crafted the amendment, and he believes what voters passed was self-enacting. He speaks with WFSU's Blaise Ganey.
All right, so I'm here with Neil Valls, the political director for the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, a group founded by the Florida American Civil Liberties Union. The group was paramount in getting the November 2018's Amendment 4 on the ballot, which ultimately gave a large group of felons an opportunity to vote again. Welcome, Neil.
Hi, thanks for having me.
No problem. And now, Neil, when I spoke with you before the 2019 session began, I asked you how the state would go forward with this or if they should do anything, because it seemed as if it was self-executing, very clear, and not really a need for elected officials to decide, like, who votes. But now the Senate and House are doing really just that. One of the big things that a lot of people are talking about is the completion in term of sentence. Now, when people were going to vote and when this was put on the ballot, what exactly did those things mean?
So the term completion of sentence as it related to somebody with a past felony conviction voting in the state of Florida is something that exists right now. The Parole Commission wrestled with these same topics, and we've been using the same standard for decades. The question we have to ask is, why change it now? This debate is a good debate, and there's one that people can have a lot of different views on. But the question is, why change from what we're doing now, especially if it's going to restrict people from voting? So I'm happy to get into the specifics, and I think that people like to talk about the specifics, but the truth is that the sentences come from judges. So that is our view, is that there's a process in place and standards in place that have been used for decades, and changing that can result in less people being able to vote in the state of Florida. And that obviously is not at the heartbeat of what Amendment 4 and the people voted for.
And so another part of what they say by term of sentence and completion is, and I guess also what you're alluding to, is the part where people can take out a lien. You know, if they owe a certain amount, they've completed their probation, the duration of their probation sentence. But now I guess the legislature is saying, hey, even if you have a civil lien, that now you must pay back even that fee. Is that something that before was not really looked at as harshly, and now is this something that's, I guess, changing?
What's changing is the legislature trying to redefine completion of sentence, as opposed to allowing it to stay in the role of the judge being in charge of the completion of sentence process. What you have is legislation that could allow somebody who is a debt collector or a government employee at the Department of Corrections levying fines that could later be determined as completion of sentence for somebody who's trying to vote, which means somebody who's not a judge making determinations that could inhibit a Florida citizen's ability to vote. Nobody supported that when they were supporting Amendment 4. And what you're seeing is this is actually a discussion about more than completion of sentence. This is a discussion about who makes decisions, elected officials and partisan agendas, or the people who overwhelmingly spoke in November.
And another part of this, outside of completion of sentence, the two offenses that are excluded are murder and sexual offense. Now, murder, the Senate is saying that attempted murder also those people should also be excluded. Do you think that, or since you are part of the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, was that the intent of the amendment?
So we believe the intent of the amendment and the people who talked into writing the amendment discussed the worst crimes possible. And so we also know that the constitutional process we have is that the the role of interpreting the Constitution is in the court system, so that we also know that all these discussions are going to end up in a process in which our courts, as is constitutional and how we do need to operate, are going to be looking at decisions that get made. So we believe that this is self-executing and that there's full authority for the Secretary of State and the departments to administer this in the way that they see best fit. The legislature can have oversight, the courts can obviously weigh in, and that we can move this forward in a way that is not driven by partisan politics.
And do you think that if anything is passed legislation-wise this year, that it ultimately will probably end up in the courts?
Of course, yes.
And that's just because you don't believe they're following what everybody got in the, put on the ballot that day and voted for, correct?
Yeah, we believe that is a part of the process for moving forward. Everybody involved acknowledges that that is something that's possible.
All right, thank you so much, Neil.
Dude, thanks, man. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Rekin McCarthy. Finally this week, research shows music therapy in neonatal intensive care units helps infants get released from hospitals early. As Health News Florida's Stephanie Colombini reports, experts in the state helped pioneer the practice, and it's now expanding.
Twinkle, twinkle,
lullabies like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star have helped soothe babies to sleep for centuries. But it's only in the last couple decades that research showed for babies born premature, these slow, simple tunes could be life-changing. That's music therapist Kelly Holden and her supervisor Rich Motes. They work at Advent Health Orlando and are singing to a baby girl in the hospital's neonatal intensive care unit. Motes says NICU babies are unique patients.
The mom's belly is the most protective environment for them, but when they're born early, they're thrusted into this world that they're not quite ready to handle. So lights, sounds, being touched at different times, learning how to eat is even a thing. You know, as adults, we don't think about that, but that could also be a stressful experience for these tiny little babies.
And when a baby is stressed, that can affect its brain permanently. Jane Stanley directs the music therapy program at Florida State University and is considered by many to be the pioneer of its use in NICUs. She started experimenting with the treatment about 20 years ago after she learned kids born premature were 50% more likely to need special education when they got older.
For fetuses, the neurological system develops in the third trimester, the last 3 months. So a baby that's born 3 months early is having its brain develop in the conditions of the NICU.
Those conditions can lead to unstable breathing and heart rates, as well as other issues. So Stanley studied whether music could help.
Our first study showed that just playing music to buffer the noxious sounds of the machinery in the NICU could cause the babies to be discharged up to 2 weeks early.
Subsequent studies continue to show earlier discharge. Stanley says NICU music therapy has mushroomed in the last 5 or 10 years. Hospitals across the nation are implementing the treatment and hiring music therapists with a special certification to work with NICU babies. Kelly Holden with Advent Health Orlando is one of them. Her recent session with the young girl in the NICU showcased her experience. NICU music therapy typically revolves around an infant's gestational age, or how far along in the pregnancy would they have been had they not been born early. Very premature babies can only handle simple humming. After many weeks in the hospital, this girl had progressed to receive more stimulation, like the guitar played by Holden's supervisor, Rich Motes, and singing.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle.
A As they go through a series of lullabies, they're constantly checking the baby's monitor to see if any of her vital signs suggest she's overwhelmed. Holden says they're also observing her body language.
You might see a grimaced face. They might get really red in the face. They can give a halt hand, which is basically their arm going straight out and their hand coming out saying, stop, you know, this is too much.
Things seem to be going well, so Holden adds another layer, touch. She lightly caresses the baby's head and moves down to her arms and chest. But Holden notices the girl's face getting red and decides to take touch out of the equation.
Some babies don't get through the whole progression, and that's okay. You know, if they are not being able to tolerate all of that, then it's going to take them longer because we're going to give them more time to calm.
Even singing eventually proves to be too much. The therapists see the girl arching her back and revert to humming. Jane Stanley says overstimulating the baby with music could actually damage the brain. She says that's why training is so important.
It's different from somebody volunteering to say, I would go into a NICU and play a harp for the babies because it's beautiful and obviously it would soothe them. Every baby is developing at a different rate and the music must be applied individually.
Stanley says getting premature babies home sooner saves hospitals money. She estimates patients close to the end of their stay in a NICU cost hospitals about $3,000 a day to care for.
That is a huge savings in medical cost. But the greatest benefit is that 2 weeks early, that baby gets to go home to its family.
New mom Ashley Preston of Gainesville is eagerly awaiting that day. Her son Carter was born earlier this year, close to 3 months premature, and only weighed a pound and a half. He spent the first few weeks of his life hooked up to breathing machines, barely able to move. Preston says music therapy has helped Carter's breathing improve, and she says it's helped her as a parent.
Because, you know, during the time that he was on the oscillator, I couldn't pick him up, but they showed me how to just hum to kind of connect with him.
Carter's a little over 4 pounds now and about the same age as a full-term baby. His mom says she'll continue to use music to care for him once he's home. I'm Stephanie Colombini.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Gainey, Sean Mulcahy, and Lynn Hatter. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Regan McCarthy. Please join us again tomorrow at this time for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. And from the United Faculty of Florida, representing over 20,000 faculty, staff professionals, and graduate assistants at 13 universities and 14 colleges. Advocates for quality higher education for all Floridians. Online at myuff.org.